Oh, it's Rachel and Claire on 5 Live Breakfast this morning. Good morning.
Thanks, Theo. Morning, everyone. And coming up on 5 Live Breakfast, the UK has joined 10 other countries in calling for a 21-day ceasefire between Israel and Hezbollah.
Liverpool thrashed West Ham and Arsenal beat Bolton to progress in the League Cup.
And this is exciting. The Earth is going to briefly gain a second moon. We'll tell you why, how, in a few minutes.
The Voice of the UK.
This is 5 Live Breakfast.
Right, let's start with the main news this morning. The UK has joined 10 other countries and the European Union in calling for a 21-day ceasefire between Israel and Hezbollah. It's hoped it will give time for further talks aimed at ending the conflict taking place on the Israel-Lebanon border. The statement followed an emergency meeting of the United Nations Security Council in New York. Antonio Guterres is the UN Secretary General.
Hell is breaking loose in Lebanon. We should all be alarmed by the escalation. Lebanon is at the brink. Since October, nearly 200,000 people within Lebanon and over 60,000 from northern Israel have fled their homes. Many lives have been lost. All these must stop.
The BBC has heard harrowing testimony from a woman who said she was raped by the former owner of Harrods, Mohammed Al-Fayed, when she was 16, after being made to have intrusive medical examinations. Kate, which isn't her real name, is one of five women who has revealed details of a serious sexual attack to a BBC documentary team. Our reporter Helena Wilkinson, from her now, contains details of a serious sexual nature.
When Kate started working for Al-Fayed, she said he asked her whether she was sexually active. He discovered she was a virgin. She said a medical was arranged for her with Dr. Anne Coxon, who asked to do an internal examination and test for sexually transmitted diseases, even though Kate said she wasn't sexually active. On her return to the office, Kate said Al-Fayed discussed intimate details about the medical. She said he summoned her one night to his apartment, where he raped her. The BBC has contacted Dr. Coxon and Harrods for comment, but so far has had no response from either.
Harrods' new owners have previously apologised unreservedly and said the actions of Mohammed Al-Fayed were that of an individual intent on abusing his power.
Network Rail says there's been a cyber attack on the public Wi-Fi network at 20 railway stations. Customers were directed to websites containing what the company called inappropriate material before their Wi-Fi was suspended. The BBC understands that customer data wasn't compromised.
And also the BBC understands that one of the richest people in the world, Elon Musk, has not been invited to the government's International Investment Summit. Sources say it's because of the billionaire's social media posts during last month's riots, which were described at the time by ministers as utterly deplorable. Next month's summit aims to attract tens of billions of pounds of investment.
The music of Radiohead and one of Shakespeare's great tragedies, Hamlet, are being brought together in a new live experience. Fusing theatre, music and movement, the new show called Hamlet Hail to the Thief will be performed in the UK next year.
Let's take a look at what the weather's doing today. Good morning, Simon King. Nice to see
Hello,
you.
Good morning,
old friend.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'll tell you what, the weather isn't very good because we've had a lot of rainfall over the last few days. The ground is very saturated and we've got further heavy rain in the forecast today. So there will be a lot of puddles out there. There could be some localised flash flooding once again across England and Wales. So there's a few things going on. The first, let's talk about across central and southern parts of England where we've got some heavy showers around this morning. There will be some brighter skies, bit of sunshine developing, but then frequent showers developing this afternoon, which will be heavy and thundery, some torrential rain giving a lot of water in a short space of time. There'll be some hail, some strong and gusty winds, particularly around the channel. Further north across Wales, the North Midlands into Northern England, quite a bit of rain this morning, particularly so towards northeastern areas of England where that rain is going to be quite persistent throughout the day. Elsewhere, it turns a little bit drier later on. For Northern Ireland, heavy rain, particularly in eastern areas of Northern Ireland, again, only gradually clearing away later this afternoon. Across Scotland, rain in central southern Scotland, moving southward, sunny spells developing into the north, and temperatures today, 14 to 18 degrees.
Thank you, Simon. Lots of football to get through this morning, Katie.
Yeah, and we'll start with a quote from Christian Eriksen. We didn't lose, but it feels like a loss. He scored Manchester United's only goal in their 1-1 opening draw in the Europa League against Dutch side Twente. But he was also at fault for their second half equaliser. He added, they looked like they wanted it more. That can't be right. In the League Cup, Diogo Jota and Cody Gakpo each scored twice as Liverpool began their title defence by coming from behind to thrash West Ham 5-1 at Anfield. Arsenal cruised past League One Bolton 5-1. And the draw for the fourth round's been done. Liverpool travel to Brighton. Tottenham will host Manchester City. And you can check out all the fixtures on the BBC Sport website and app. And in cricket, England say Test captain Ben Stokes is on track to be part of the series against Pakistan, which begins in 12 days. He's been out of action with a hamstring injury since the start of August.
The Voice of the UK.
This is Five Live Breakfast.
Good morning, everyone. How are you doing this morning? It is Thursday, the 26th of September. We're going to talk about the situation on the Israel-Lebanon border in just a moment. Calls for a ceasefire, but it does look like the Israelis are planning to move in some kind of ground offensive. It's a really precarious situation there. So we'll get into that and talk to somebody who lives in Beirut, a British citizen who is at the moment unable to leave. Just get some idea of how difficult that is for civilians in that country at the moment.
Yeah.
But we're also going to talk about why today is a significant day, the 26th of September. And it is a significant day because, Claire, more babies are born on this day than any other day in the whole of the year.
Significantly more.
So rewind back 9 months and you find yourself, well, more or less Christmas Day.
Yeah.
In or around Christmas Day.
Christmas tipple.
Yeah. I mean, I'm impressed that anyone has the time for such
activities.
Commitment.
Yeah. As you used that Christmas phrase earlier time. In the week, in restful areas.
Yes. It's just too busy. There's too much going on. There are too many people.
Can you be
in the
bothered,
house?
Quite frankly?
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's interesting, isn't it? We're going to be at a maternity unit?
We are a bit later on. And
excellent.
We want to know if it's your birthday today. And if it is, then you're not really very special because lots of people have their birthday today. But are you?
Yes.
Are you special? So let us know why we should be celebrating your birthday today. You can text us on 85058.
Yeah, do. We're also going to be talking about this story. It's on the front of the Mirror today. Mum of five becoming, tragically, the first Briton to die in the UK after having received these liquid Brazilian butt lift injections. Five daughters. She lives in Gloucestershire. She lived in Gloucestershire, rather. And there's many, many calls now to say, look, we've been warning about this for quite some time. We really do need to move on this now. So we're getting into that story on the programme as well. We'll also bring you the latest that you probably heard in the news headlines there. BBC hearing harrowing testimony for the first time from a woman who says she was raped by the former Harrods owner, Mohammed Al-Fayed, when she was just 16. So we'll bring you that story as well. And in my opinion today, I mean, there's been an awful lot of talk at the Labour Party conference, Wes Streeting giving his keynote speech, the health secretary, just yesterday. And he's doubling down on his message, as was the Prime Minister, of the NHS being broken. But there has been pushback, hasn't there, from inside the NHS. People say, you know, you talk it down and it's bad for staff morale, but it's also bad for patients as well because their expectations lower and maybe they don't come forward. They don't say, I've got something wrong with me. I need it fixed. Oh, what's the point?
We know every time we talk about the NHS, your experiences are very varied. People who have had a brilliant time, fantastic healthcare, others who haven't. And I'm already getting those messages on social media this morning. But do you think it is important for politicians to talk up rather than talk down the NHS? Let us know. 85058. You can send a voice note. 08085 909693. It is 8 minutes past six. Morning. So let's start with this. The UK has joined 10 other countries in calling for a 21-day ceasefire between Israel and Hezbollah. The statement followed an emergency meeting of the UN Security Council, during which the Secretary General Antonio Guterres said all hell is breaking loose in Lebanon.
Yes, Israel's most senior general has told his troops to prepare for a ground offensive across the border. Mr. Guterres called for an immediate end to the hostilities. Listening and watching at the UN in New York was our political editor, Chris Mason.
Hi, Rachel. Morning, Claire, from New York, where the Prime Minister has been meeting all sorts of world leaders, some of them for the first time since he won the general election. And the two big theatres of war, if you like, that he's dealing with on the international stage, that the United Nations here is dealing with on the international stage, Ukraine, he's met President Zelensky, and then also Lebanon. And overnight, whilst you've been asleep, there has been a statement, a joint statement that the UK is a signatory to. It was put out by the White House. There was a little blip, actually, when it was first published, because the UK's name was missed off it, much to the consternation of quite a few Brits over here. It rapidly appeared a few minutes later. A typo was blamed for it. So a joint statement by the United States, Australia, Canada, the European Union, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Qatar, and yes, the UK, that's saying that there should be an immediate 21-day ceasefire across the Lebanon-Israel border to provide space for diplomacy, they say. So plenty of effort here to try and make it clear that the conflict needs to stop between Lebanon and Israel, but an expectation too that it is actually likely to get more significant, to escalate, to get more dangerous and worse.
Chris Mason in New York for us. Let's talk to Anne Bougie, who is a British national currently living in Lebanon. Anne, good morning.
Good morning.
Incredibly worrying times for you and your family, no doubt. Just tell us, what is the situation where you are at the moment?
Well, it's difficult, to say the least, but where we are on the east side of the city, we are relatively okay, but our neighbours on the west part of the city have suffered dreadfully in the last 10 days or so. And of course, in the south of the country, areas of which are only 40 kilometres away, it has just been horrendous for months.
Yeah. When you say with the recent escalation, people you know in the east, what has been happening there? What are they telling you?
Well, I only know what I have seen on television, because we don't have much contact between east and west. Because of my situation with my husband, I'm at home most of the time. But, I mean, it's just horrendous that these targeted missiles that have killed so many innocent people and injured thousands more, left so many people homeless. It's awful. But the overall feeling is that there is so much tension and fear in the air. You can taste it. It's very real and it's very distressing.
Your husband had a stroke, didn't he? So he's partially paralysed.
He's had several strokes. He's partially paralysed and he has lost 90% of his vision.
I'm really sorry to hear that.
Thank you.
And I guess, you know, your life centres around that. So are you in
it
a position...
Must.
Exactly. So are you in a position to leave even if you wanted to?
No, not really. Travelling would be rather difficult because I have my own health issues also, which include mobility issues. So, no, it wouldn't be easy for us to leave. But we have to take into account that Simone also has a sister and a sister-in-law here who have no one to look after them. This is our home. And at our age, which is not young, how do you start again when all of the savings that you've worked for are tied up in the bank and you can't access that money?
I mean, we've seen, obviously, in recent weeks, things escalate. And we all saw the pictures of exploding pages initially and how that not only affected the people involved, but the people around them as well. What has that done to you? Say you can kind of taste the fear. But the fact when those kind of attacks happen in the communities unexpectedly, how has that changed people's mindsets in Lebanon right now?
Well, my general feeling is that people are incredibly angry that something like that could happen. That, to me, seemed like such a deliberate attack to concentrate on certain members of society. Sending a missile into an area is a bit more random. But technology, of course, now means that there are these targeted strikes where a single level in a building can be hit. But that, of course, also means that there are mass casualties, destruction of property, injuries, too numerous to mention, really. The whole situation is just really bad.
And how long have you been in Lebanon?
I've been here 7 years.
Right. Because I guess up until this point, and October the 7th clearly kind of brought Hezbollah back into the fray again. What was life like before there, before that date, before the recent kind of escalation?
Well, a bit strange for a few years now. Initially, when we came, we had two reasonably good years, but of course then my husband's health suffered during that time, so that affected us personally. But then there was the financial crisis, which means, as I said earlier, no one can access their savings in the bank. You're limited to $400 a month to live on. Prices of everything escalated. There's very little work available for people who are of eligible age to be working. Then, of course, there was the Beirut port explosion, and that had a dreadful impact on society. Mm. And the fact that no one seems to have been credited with responsibility for that. People are still looking for answers.
Life has been very, very difficult, and
it
sounds like it. It really does. And Sir Keir Starmer, he's in New York at the moment, the British Prime Minister, saying to Brits in Lebanon, you should leave now. Are you finding that? Do you know many other British people there? Are they trying to get out?
I understand that some people are trying to leave, but of course, a lot of the flights through the airport are cancelled. When you've only got $400 a month, you have to think long and hard about whether or not you can even buy a ticket to leave. A lot of people that have dual nationality, like myself, that have Lebanese citizenship through their marriage, have decided to stay because of businesses, family, homes here, and no homes in the UK. So I think it's very mixed. The Lebanese are very resilient. They have lived through turmoil after turmoil for centuries, and they always bounce back. But this is a different level. This is a different scale.
It sounds easy to say get out, harder to do on so many levels. Mm. Anne, thanks so much for talking to us.
You're most welcome.
We wish you and your husband and wider family all the best. Anne Bougie there, a British national currently in Lebanon. After 8 o'clock on 5 Live Breakfast, Jeremy Bowen, the BBC's international editor, will be joining us and answering your questions. So if there's anything, whatever you want to know about the current crisis, about how we got here, Lebanon's part in the Middle East crisis going back decades, he's the man who will have answers for you. Text them into us now, 850-58, 17 past six.
I'm Kim Cattrall, and I want to tell you about my new podcast, a new audio drama telling the history of the CIA from the inside out.
The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked.
He's got to convince Congress to give him an open checkbook now.
America has suffered its worst domestic attack of the 20th century at Pearl Harbor.
How do we make contact with the NKGB?
Central Intelligence, starring me, Kim Cattrall, Ed Harris, and Johnny Flynn.
There's $50,000 in it for you if you say yes.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
Five Live Breakfast. In my opinion.
In my opinion.
In my opinion.
And in my opinion.
So today's In My Opinion is all about the NHS and the language we use when we criticise it.
Hi, Rach. Hi, Claire. Roy Lilly here, health commentator and former NHS Trust chair. In my opinion, saying the NHS is broken is damaging and unhelpful. Yesterday, Health Secretary Wes Streeting, in his speech to Labour's conference, said he wouldn't back down from using the phrase. He should. I sort of understand he's using it during the election campaign as a soundbite, but the persistent claim the NHS is broken, now used by others in a wider context, is very unhelpful. Who wants to work in a broken organisation with its overtones of despair and pointlessness? If the NHS is broken, it's politics and politicians who've broken it.
Five Live Breakfast. The voice of the UK.
Hello. We will speak to health commentator Roy Lilly later in the show, but we want to take your views on this. Do we need to stop bashing the NHS? Does calling it broken insult the millions of workers and patients in the NHS right now? Or maybe using provocative language, is that the only way we can describe the urgency of the situation? It's certainly what Wes Streeting, Health Secretary, would say. Have you had a good experience with the NHS, or maybe a bad one?
So text us 85058. You can get in contact on social media, which lots of people already have. Yorkshire Lad says this: when you actually get NHS service, it is brilliant, second to none. It is actually getting to that service which is problematic for many people. Is the NHS broken? Well, yes and no is the answer. This wonderful organisation needs wholesale change. 2024 looks completely different to 1948.
Charlie says messaging should be more about making the NHS even better. Investment in the things like proper systems would benefit doctors, nurses and patients.
Alison says it depends who you speak to. I've recently lost my dad and the care he received was appalling. I work in health and social care, and I'm so shocked at the treatment he received. Nothing can replace the time that was taken from him due to the lack of care he received. Really sorry to hear that, Alison.
Karen's been in touch. Morning, Karen. My brother's experience yesterday, overnight in A&E, then today, when serious errors in communication and patient management were discovered, are like chalk and cheese. Yes, it is broken because it cannot cope. Saying that is not knocking the NHS. In fact, it does need serious help.
And Ian reckons that there is a little bit of political gamesmanship going on here. He says it's a ploy by the new government to be as negative and downbeat on the previous government and the state of the country. This way, even a little improvement will look like they've worked miracles. But the negativity and it's down to the Tories has to stop now. Labour need to do their job. So thank you for all of those. 85058 08085 909693 to send us a voice notes. It's 6:21. Right, Manchester United stumbled at the start of their Europa League campaign last night, being held to a 1-1 draw by their Dutch manager's boyhood club, 20. Elsewhere, Arsenal comfortably knocked out League One side Bolton Wanderers with a 5-1 win in the League Cup. Here's the Gunners manager, Mikel Arteta.
We had a lot of players that we wanted to give them minutes to keep everybody involved, to show their quality and to help us to win the game. And then it was magnificent as well to give the chance to some of our youngest in the academy, and the way they fulfill that gap immediately and the way they perform, and then to see the joy in their eyes and what it meant to them.
And at Anfield, Liverpool beat West Ham 5-1, and we're joined now by Liverpool fan, lead singer of The Farm, and part of the supporters group Spirit of Shankly, Peter Hooton. Morning, Peter.
Good morning, yeah.
And old friend of the show, West Ham fan Andy Payne, who's also a committee member of Hammers United. Hello, Andy.
Good morning, Rachel.
Now, you two know each other, don't you?
We met at Glastonbury a few years ago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Andy loves a bit of Glastonbury action, Peter. And you've come together, I think, last night to talk about ticket prices, which we will talk about in just a moment. But let's deal with the football first, shall we? I mean, Andy, it started well enough for West Ham, but it was a bit brutal in the end, wasn't it?
It was. I remember going up there in 89. We had the cheek to score first, and we lost 5-1.
Should have learned your lesson.
Well, last night when we scored first, I turned to my mates and said, "Do you remember when we scored first in 89? They did us 5-1." Dear, oh dear, oh dear.
Yeah, not good.
It wasn't a 5-1 game. I mean, really. I mean, it was quite close until Jota scored the second. You know, so I think it was fairly close until then. And then I think he just gave up, didn't he, West Ham, in the end?
Yeah.
Was it that Alvarez red card as well was a bit of a turning point, wasn't it?
I don't think it helped, to be honest, but I think there were, believe it or not, there were signs of, you know, signs to be encouraged if you're a West Ham fan last night. That's probably the best we've played all season, even though we lost 5-1. As Peter said, it wasn't really a 5-1.
No. And how do you assess Liverpool's performance then, Peter? Because they were sluggish to start. Are we beginning to see yet what an Arne Slot Liverpool side really looks like? And I appreciate this is after, what, 9 changes from the side that started at Bournemouth at the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, everyone's quietly confident. He just gets on with the business, doesn't he? And he doesn't come out with any granite. He's not punching the air. It's completely different to Klopp. But you've got to remember that Paisley was completely different to Shankly, you know, so it's one of those situations where everyone's willing to give him to. I mean, it was a lot of the some of the youngsters last night, but obviously in the Carabao, you've got to give rotation a go, haven't you? It's got to happen, you know?
Yeah, so you're happy to give him a bit of a time. Right, so how can we cheer you up, Andy? Not perhaps by talking about ticket prices, because I know that you got together, the two of you, to talk about the West Ham Save Our Concessions campaign. So what's going on with the West Ham season ticket prices this year?
Well, first of all, thanks to all of the people at Spirit Shankly who turned out brilliantly last night in solidarity with West Ham fans. I think it's a sign of things to come, fans joining up for the sake of, you know, the game, frankly. That, you know, we were told that during COVID that football's nothing without fans. The clubs seem to forget that now, and I think they're just, because of the demand for tickets for Premier League football, that they just seem to think they can kind of charge what they want when they want, really. At our club, the club have started to mess with the concessions, the age and disability concessions, the price concessions, and really this is part of the culture of football. It's how young and old and disabled get into the game. And if you're going to start messing around with that and making it more expensive, you know, you're potentially cutting out the, you know, the past, the present and the future.
So this is, just to make it clear, this is new season ticket holders don't have access to lower prices, effectively, for younger fans and older fans. Everyone is expected to pay the same standard price.
Yeah, and I mean, look, to put it in perspective, you know, if you're a father or mother and one of your children, you know, comes into the frame, you won't be able to get, if you're in bands 1, 2, 3 and 4, you know, there's 6 bands in total, you wouldn't be able to get a season ticket for your child or indeed your relative or your friend in that place without paying full price. That is just frankly mendacious and wrong. And it's coming through the back door. You know, Liverpool stood with us last night because they understand, as did Everton as well. There were Everton fans there before the game as well. They understand, you know, how important this is. And what comes at West Ham has happened at Spurs. You know, we're in touch with them. We've got solidarity in Tottenham and Aston Villa and others.
I just wonder, Peter, how much power you feel you have up against big clubs like this.
Yeah, it's very difficult. But, you know, I think it's significant that 18 of the 19 Premier League clubs all raised their prices and started attacking concessions. So at the Spurs of Shankly, we're acutely aware of that. You know, the ticket prices over the years have far outstripped inflation. You know, it was unbelievable, you know. But there's so much money in football. The TV deals recently seem to have flatlined. And Kieran Maguire at Liverpool University, he's an expert on this. He's absolutely brilliant. And he's saying that, you know, that the American owners look at the NFL and think the Premier League's underpriced. You know, they want tickets of £100, you know, for the average ticket. And so we know what's coming. And if West Ham and Tottenham can get rid of concessions, you know, that's what, you know, that's the writing's on the wall there, really, I think.
Well, I'm glad the two of you were able to get together and sort of share your stories and sing from one hymn sheet on that one. And we'll wait to see where this goes. I know you've got a meeting with the West Ham board at some stage, Andy, haven't you, about all of this?
Yeah, I'm part of the fan advisory board. And to be fair to West Ham, you know, we've got open negotiations with them and we're building a good relationship. We just want to work with the club. At the end of the day, this extra revenue that is being generated by these concession changes, you know, that pays 4 weeks of Danny Ings' wages, to put it into perspective.
Yeah.
It's completely unnecessary. So we are looking forward to working with the club, but we're really pleased and we're going to be working with all fan groups. So we're in touch with Newcastle, we're in touch with Spurs, with their own extra away games. So we're hoping to, such, you know, to see the solidarity that was amazing last night at Anfield.
Okay. All right. Well, look, we'll keep track of this and see where it all goes. Thanks to you both for being up and about early this morning. Really appreciate it. Cheers, Peter.
Thanks,
Andy. Say hi to Kirsty from us all. Take care.
I will. Yeah, I got in at four. I got in at 4:05, so I'm a little bit tired.
Yeah, that's why you're sounding a little bit croakier than usual. But that's okay. We forgive you. Thank you for getting up for us. That's Andy Payne there, friend of the show. Peter Hootland as well. There's loads more reaction to last night's football on the Five Live Football Daily podcast. It's 6:29.
Brilliant Mike Scott and the Waterboys there, heralding in this story. Get ready for a cosmic surprise this autumn. Earth is about to get a second moon. Let's talk to Dr. Jennifer Millard, an astronomer at Fifth Star Labs and presenter of the Awesome Astronomy Podcast. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well. Thanks for joining us. Sounds like a bit of a treat. Tell us about this second moon.
This is a little mini moon, so it's very small compared to our normal moon, only 10 metres across, so we're thinking double-decker bus sort of size. And it's a captured asteroid because Earth's orbit around the sun is not lonely, it's very, very busy. There are thousands of asteroids that have a similar orbit to our planet. And on occasion, these asteroids happen to catch up to us, and if they're moving slow enough compared to Earth, then our planet's gravity can temporarily capture it. And that's what's happened in this instance. So this mini moon is going to hang around for a couple of months. It's not going to complete a full orbit of our planet, but it's kind of going to swing around with our planet and then carry on orbiting the sun as it was before.
Right. So it's not a permanent relationship like our moon. It's just a kind of brief fling, is what you're saying.
It is indeed. It is just a brief autumn fling.
Okay. I like the double-decker bus analogy. I like the fling analogy. So can we see it?
Unfortunately, not with backyard telescopes, because this asteroid is, it's not the smallest asteroid out there, but it's also not particularly large either. So professional telescopes, they'll be able to pick it up. So that means we'll be able to look forward to wonderful pictures as the months roll on of this tiny little dot moving rapidly compared to the background stars. And of course, astronomers will be analysing its composition, refining our understanding of its orbit. Because, you know, it's not very often that we get an asteroid being so close to us for such a long time. So it's a wonderful scientific opportunity.
And what can we learn from it then? When you run all those tests and processes, what do we hope to learn?
It's all about understanding the asteroid population that's near Earth. This is of top priority because, of course, these are the ones which are most dangerous to our planet. I'd like to add that this asteroid has got a 0% chance of hitting us, so no one has to worry at all. But there could be asteroids out there which maybe will come a little bit closer to Earth. And so by understanding what they're made of, you know, we can have a better understanding of what might happen if they were to hit us, or how we might mitigate it. So how we might deflect it, for example, because that's probably our best bet.
Yes. So great to have you on. So much knowledge and reassuring at the same time, Jennifer.
Good. I don't want anyone panicking. No. This is a wonderful, fun science opportunity. So, yeah,
brilliant
enjoy
stuff.
It while it sticks around.
We'll keep our little telescope then in the box because it's not going to be much use. But look forward to looking at the pictures. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Jennifer Millard there, astronomer at Fifth Star Labs and presenter, if you want to have a listen, to the excellent Awesome Astronomy Podcast just after 6:30.
Keep your messages for Jeremy Bowen coming in. We're going to talk to him later on in the programme. And still to come,
if the people of a given country are against a certain type of speech, they should talk to their elected representatives and pass a law to prevent it.
Elon Musk, but apparently he's not been invited to a top UK investment summit. 6:32.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Here are the news headlines. The UK has joined 10 major Western and Arab nations and the European Union in calling for a 21-day ceasefire between Israel and Hezbollah. During an emergency meeting of the UN Security Council last night, the Secretary-General, Antonio Guterres, said hell was breaking loose in Lebanon.
Also this morning, the BBC has learned from a has heard testimony from a woman who said she was raped by the former owner of Harrods, Mohammed Al-Fayed, when she was 16 after being made to have intrusive medical examinations. Harrods' new owners have previously apologised unreservedly and said the actions of Mr. Fayed were that of an individual intent on abusing his power.
Network Rail says there's been a cyber attack on the public Wi-Fi network at 20 railway stations. It's understood that customer data wasn't compromised. compromised.
And US media reports say the mayor of New York City, Eric Adams, is facing federal criminal charges. He's been under investigation for campaign funding violations, but has insisted he's done nothing wrong.
Simon's here with the weather. Hello again.
Good morning. It's looking pretty wet out there across England and Wales, and the ground is already very saturated after the rain that we had earlier on in the week. So further rainfall today, which will be torrential in some parts, could lead on to some localised flooding. So across England and Wales, persistent rain through today across the northeast of England in particular, but we've got some areas of rain even further south. And while we might see some brighter skies, bit of sunshine developing across southern England, this is where we'll see some torrential downpours with some lightning, some hail mixed in as well. Gusty winds around the English Channel coasts, maximum temperatures getting up to about 13 to 18 degrees. Now for Northern Ireland, we've got some rain as well here, but in particular towards eastern parts of Northern Ireland. That rain is going to linger for much of the day today. And across Scotland, central southern Scotland, rain initially this morning, that's going to clear to the south to give some sunny spells for most of Scotland. Temperatures 9 to 13 Celsius.
Right, hands up who still has a CD player in their car?
No hands.
No, I do.
You have?
Yeah. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
But it's an old car.
Mm-hmm.
So you obviously don't have CDs still rattling around in your footballs then.
No.
Some people are very attached to them. And there's a report in the Times today saying that the last mainstream car manufacturer to have put them in their cars has now stopped. So that's it. You can't really buy a new car with a CD player in it. But there is a backlash against this from someone who says, this is from the Entertainment and Retail Association, says that there are 7.5 million people who still listen to CDs in their cars. Car makers are looking through the rear view mirror when it comes to CD. The lesson of vinyl is you should never write off a music format. Even today, 50% more people say they listen to music on CD than on vinyl.
I have to say, I've got a portable CD player and I was literally this close to chucking it the other day and I thought, no.
Don't do it.
Still on the shelf.
The argument is it's the best quality music you can get on
it
a
is.
CD.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not compressed.
If you don't have a CD player in your car, what are you going to do when your car's frosty in the morning?
Yeah.
Good point.
Your CD.
As you know, Simon, I rely on mine.
You do?
Yeah. We recently got out all our CDs because we're doing a bit of a clear out and they're just lying on the floor. I don't know what's going to happen to them, but we have got a CD player. My husband keeps threatening to get it out, but I can't stand the mess of the CDs everywhere.
No, but fix the one in the car and then chuck them back in the footwell.
That's good.
There you go.
Yeah, that's good.
Job done.
How are the roads looking, Ellie?
They're not too bad, unless you're on the M1 southbound in Hertfordshire. That's pretty slow, so good time to get your CDs out. One lane is closed there at Junction 8 at Hemel-Hempstead. You've got congestion back to Junction 10 already. There's been an accident, so you have got delays. The M25 anti-clockwise, all traffic is being held. This is at Junction 28, the Brook Street roundabout. Congestion there is a mile before 29. Also 3 miles back along the A12 at the Brentwood bypass. And in Kent, the M2 westbound, that is closed. There's been an accident at Junction 1. Congestion there is to the Medway Viaduct at the moment. Ellie Brennan, 5 Live Travel.
The voice of the UK.
This is 5 Live Breakfast.
So loads of football yesterday, Katie. I suppose like every day, but with Manchester United, another case of one step forward, two steps back.
Yeah, so the Europa League is our focus this week. So like the Champions League, we've got these changes now. There's a new league phase. There's a massive table to look at. And United were facing Erik ten Hag's former club, Twente, from the Netherlands. And they were big favourites going into it, of course. And they looked like they were going to cruise along to an easy win. The Dutch side had different ideas, though. So United's goal scorer, Christian Eriksen, caught in possession by Sam Lammers, formerly of Rangers, who didn't waste his opportunity. So it ended 1-1. And I just thought these were interesting comments beforehand. Ten Hag was saying it's not nice to hurt something you love talking about his old club. But the irony, once again, is that it was Manchester United who were hurt, lacking that ruthless killer instinct. And that's despite spending big on their front line this summer. Let's hear from Ten Hag.
We have to work on it. That's clear. Yeah, I think we create enough chances. But yeah, we have to score. But it's not only up to them two players. Definitely in this moment not on Rasmus because he's just returning, but also other players. And we have across the front line, we have there enough players who can score goals.
Next up, they host Spurs in the Premier League on Sunday. So that should be an interesting one from two sides who've been a little bit underwhelming.
Yeah, and Christian Eriksen saying Twente wanted it more and Ten Hag agreeing with him. I mean, you know, at least they're being honest, but it doesn't bode well.
Although I think Christian Eriksen's point was that he was saying that's not right, i.e. I think we feel like we want it, but something's not clicking.
And yeah, that's a good point. We didn't lose, but it feels like a loss, he said. Much smoother nights for Arsenal and Liverpool in the League Cup.
Yeah, so Liverpool, the holders, and cruised through, had to come from behind, but beat West Ham 5-1. It was a Quanta own goal in the first half as well for the Hammers. So Diogo Jota, Cody Gakpo, each scoring twice, Mo Salah naturally on the score sheet as well. Let's hear from forward Jota, who admitted that the final score he felt had flattered their side.
Didn't start the way we wanted. Obviously, we're going 1-0 down. Then in the second half, we turned it around completely. And in the end, we got a couple of goals that make the result a bit not really what the game was, to be honest. They played better to deserve a better result than that. But that's football.
So we had the draw for the fourth round last night. Liverpool will face Brighton in the next round. Arsenal were also 5-1 winners last night over League One side Bolton. Mikel Arteta naming a young lineup. So he made 8 changes from the draw they had with City on Sunday in the Premier League. And the kids stepped up. 17-year-old Ethan Nwaneri, the youngest ever Premier League debutant a couple of seasons ago, you might remember, scored 2 goals for them. It was his first 2 senior goals for Arsenal, joined on the score sheet by Rice, by Havertz, Raheem Sterling getting his first Arsenal goal and start as well. Arteta delighted with the way his academy players stepped up.
We had a lot of players that we wanted to give them minutes to keep everybody involved, to show their quality and to help us to win the game. And then it was magnificent as well to give the chance to some of our youngest in the academy, and the way they fulfill that gap immediately and the way they perform, and then to see the joy in their eyes and what it meant to them.
So next up for Arsenal will be Preston of the Championship. In cricket, England say Test captain Ben Stokes is on track to be part of the series against Pakistan. That starts in 12 days' time. He's been out of action since August with a hamstring injury picked up in the 100, and off the back of 2 golds at the Paralympics. Great Britain's Sophie Unwin and Jenny Hull won silver in the Women's B Road Race. That was at the Road and Paracycling Road World Championships in June.
Thank you very much, Katie. Morning, everyone. It's Thursday morning. Thanks for being with us. 6:40. Now, Elon Musk has not been invited to the UK's International Investment Summit because of his social media post during last month's riots. Theo Leggett from Wake Up to Money is with us. Morning, Theo.
Morning.
What's the issue? Well, I mean, we know what the issue is here, but was he invited and then uninvited, or he was never on the list?
We don't know, but this does seem to be a bit of a slap down for Elon Musk. I mean, look at him. He is the world's richest man. He's immensely powerful, and he's the kind of person that the government would really like to host in this country and to get investing. You know, Britain needs gigafactories and things, and he would be the right kind of person. But we saw during the riots that he was using his voice on X, what used to be Twitter, and he was making comments like civil war is inevitable. These were seen as very inflammatory. And at the time, ministers said those comments were totally unjustifiable and pretty deplorable. So it's quite difficult if on the one hand you're saying somebody's saying things which are deplorable and unacceptable, and on the other hand, you're inviting him to your big summit for business leaders.
Well, here's what confused me, because I saw this story this morning, but then I also recalled I'd heard Peter Carl on the BBC on Monday, I think it was, and he was directly asked if he'd share a stage, share a stage with Elon Musk, and this is what he said.
I would definitely sit on a stage with Elon Musk. I think what would be different, though, is the nature of the conversation that we'd have. The thing that surprised me was that he wasn't pushed at all on any of the statements he's made and some of the decisions he's made with Twitter. But, you know, when it comes to Elon Musk, you know, again, he is a remarkable inventor, a remarkable innovator, and a quite extraordinary business person that can capitalize and commercialize those innovations. And I give him credit for that.
So what's the deal with the mixed messaging here?
Well, I think the mixed messaging is the fact that the government finds itself in a conundrum. It has to do something. It can't just roll over and say, Elon Musk can say what he likes about Britain and we're not going to respond. At the same time, you know, you have to engage with him. There is potential investment, or at least you have to hope there is potential investment down the line. The government might have given up on that, but we've seen no sign of it. You know, you have to say that you'll engage with a man, but you don't invite him to your very big high profile investment summit, which the government has set up as part of its first 100 days in office. You know, it's a prestigious thing here. Of course, we should bear in mind, this is about invitation. There's no guarantee that had he been invited,
Elon Musk would actually turn up.
Yeah. So who is going to be there? Do we know who's on the list? Or not yet?
Not yet. It is a big investment summit. It is supposed to have some of the big names. So in a normal world, you would expect the world's richest man to at the very least have been
there. So the big tech companies, services companies, presumably manufacturing, like the whole spread, would it be?
The idea is to bring money into the UK, to bring in investment. So any companies that you think have the money would be prepared potentially to put it into the UK. The new government is very big on attracting investment. All governments are, really. So if there's a company that you think might be interested in Britain, well, you're obviously going to invite them, aren't you?
Yeah. Thank you very much, Theo. Theo Leggett there, who's been on Wake Up to Money this morning. You can listen back to that pod on BBC Sounds, 6:44.
Now, some prisoners who were released under the government's emergency scheme were freed by mistake, apparently. Let's get more on this from our political correspondent, Hannah Miller. Morning, Hannah.
Morning.
So what have they said? What have they confirmed?
So when the government introduced its early release scheme, there were some offences that meant that you were not eligible. So one of those was breaching a restraining order. Prisoners who had been convicted of that were told, supposedly, no, you're not going to be let out. What appears to have happened here is a bit of a technicality in some ways, but it's important. So the list of people who couldn't be released included people convicted under the Sentencing Act from 2020. And there were 37 people, it seems, in the system who had wrongly had their cases logged under much older legislation from 1997. So when the system was looking at who could be released, those people, the 37 with the 1997 legislation, it didn't flag up that they weren't eligible to be released. They have been released. And then 32 of them, the Ministry of Justice says, have now been brought back behind bars. The government says that those convictions remain valid, so they can be brought back to prison. And the Ministry of Justice says it's working urgently with police to try to get the remaining five back in prison.
OK, so that's covered that off. Just to move on, I mean, this is a story. The Prime Minister acceptance of so-called freebies is not going away. It's across the papers today. We had the Prime Minister on the show yesterday when he was defending using an £18 million penthouse owned by Labour peer Lord Ali. And let's take a listen. He said it was important for his son's GCSEs.
When we were running into the election, my son was doing his GCSEs. And we had lots of journalists outside our house. I'm not complaining about that, but I had promised him faithfully that I would give him an environment in which he could calmly get on, his one chance to do his GCSEs, and therefore be relocated somewhere else. A gift, which we then allocated a sum of money to. So sometimes what sits behind these are human explanations. Mm-hmm. But look, now we're in government. I think if you take, for example, clothing, I think that's, you know, when the hurly-burly of an election campaign is one thing. We're in government now, and so you won't see clothing declarations from me again.
Bit of an exclusive there in Rachel's interview. That was the first time he'd revealed that fact. But obviously, now, you know, we know Lord Ali has, everyone's been looking at the kind of connection between the two of them. And the paper's saying, well, there are other, you know, connections here as well. Looking back to other videos he's shot around the time of COVID, it seems to be that this is a story that isn't going away.
Yeah, so one of the things that some of the papers have picked up on this morning is that Keir Starmer appeared to use Lord Ali's flat for a broadcast about COVID restrictions quite a long time ago now. I think to some extent they are looking for connections, as you say, and whether there's anything really dodgy about that is very much open to question. It was a work situation that he was using it for. He never pretended that it was his own home. It's not unusual for politicians to use all kinds of different locations to record clips. So while a lot of the papers have gone on that line today as they seek for more connections, that is one that perhaps the Prime Minister and the Labour Party won't find too difficult to necessarily get around, although they're not commenting officially. But I think what is interesting about this, as the kind of endless search for connections between Lord Ali and Keir Starmer and the row about donations continues, is that Keir Starmer doesn't really seem to see that there's anything wrong with any of this. There's a lot of public anger about it. He faced questions about it from broadcasters multiple times yesterday and suggested, you know, particularly in the case of the flat, no money changed hands, as he told Rachel, and seemed to suggest, you know, this was all above board. It's all been declared. That is true. But there are many people feel like this kind of behaviour wasn't or isn't appropriate. But Keir Starmer seems to be of the view that there's no need to change the rules as they are. He has acted by those rules. And I think for some people, all that language about change and about public service and doing government differently, the actions that have been seen and that have come to light have made that feel more questionable, although the government would say that all the rules have been followed, all the donations have been declared.
Thanks so much for the update, Hannah. That's our political correspondent, Hannah Miller. Get your views in. This text is saying he only received it because he revealed it, rather, in the interview because he knew he would be found out, but did the use of the property run until the end of the GCSEs? And Liz, though, morning Liz, thanks for getting in touch, says, who gives a flying fig about this? When are we looking at all the Tory donations and all the awarding of contracts to their mates? Your views as ever welcome on anything we talk about. 85058, 11 minutes to 7.
Matt Shawley,
BBC Radio 5 Live.
We are looking for a member of Matt's Parliament for New Forest East. Mick has got a claim. Hello, Mick.
In 1997, I proposed in a little hotel. I was actually in the bathroom.
What?
We were getting ready for dinner and I wanted it all to be sort of sorted before we went in and celebrated.
Lisa Nadi, such a state of culture, major sport.
We're toughening up the system to make sure that people who are unfit owners can't become football club owners.
Matt Shawley,
Monday to Friday from 2
on BBC Radio 5 Live.
It's 5 Live Breakfast. Rachel and Claire with you. Coming up, we're talking to our international editor, Jeremy Bowen, later in the programme, just after 8 o'clock. So if you have any questions about what is happening between Israel and Hezbollah and the situation in Lebanon, do get in touch and we will get him to answer some of them for you. 85058 on the text.
Now, you may have seen this story, you may have actually heard it here on 5 Live yesterday, about a man from Warwickshire who survived being dragged by a hippo into the depths of a river in Zambia. Now, he says on reflection he hasn't come to hate all hippos, but he's not very fond of this one in particular, which is fair enough. Roland Cherry, he's 63, sustained major injuries after he was tossed in the air like a rag doll while he and his wife were on a canoe safari. He spoke to 5 Live and said the experience wouldn't stop his appreciation of the natural world.
I'm conscious we were in their territory. Subsequently, it's turned out that it was a female hippo with a calf who was very protective, but... No, I don't hate hippos. I don't hate any wildlife because we were there to see the natural world and we wanted to see it. But I didn't want to see it that close up, really, perhaps.
No, not that close up. Because hippos aren't carnivores, are they? They're herbivores.
No, that's true.
Primarily, I think.
So, you know, it was just doing it for kicks, well, is what you're saying. It's even worse.
It to protect its bubba.
Oh, okay.
It's a little one, which is understandable, but they are aggressive. But I like appreciate Roland's attitude, you know.
Yeah.
He wasn't having a go at the hippo.
They're not all the same. I'd give another hippo a go, is what he's saying.
Maybe not get quite that close.
No.
Thanks for your messages, by the way, this morning on our In My Opinion today, which is all about the NHS and whether this government in particular is talking the NHS down to its detriment, not just staff morale, but also putting people off seeking help in the health service. The NHS saved my life, says this one. I was diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer in March 23, 3 weeks after visiting my GP, started 6 months of chemo 4 weeks after diagnosis. And then I was told I was cancer-free in October after surgery. Each and every medical professional I've come across during treatment has been brilliant, says Joanna in Huddersfield.
David's been in touch. Morning, David from Woking. Good morning, Claire and Rachel. I agree the NHS is broken, but the people who work there aren't. Broken things need to be fixed. So now Wes Streeting is in control. Maybe he should switch to saying more about how he's going to fix it and change the narrative, says David.
And this one, in my opinion, my local hospital is in special measures for constant failings. It's had several serious investigations for patient deaths, most notably maternity deaths and failings going back decades. That is not an NHS that's broken. It's an NHS that is failing and incompetent. All we hear from the Trust is, we are sorry, we will learn from the mistakes. It is not the politicians or the government, it's down to those who are employed and work in the Trust. I have no faith in my hospital.
And this is from Alan in Bedfordshire. Thanks for getting in touch, Alan. We are bombarded with negative stories about the NHS by the UK media. When a politician has said good things about the NHS, there's always been a but question in response by whoever is conducting the interview. Now the media has the cheat to say the new government should stop saying the NHS is broken after a decade of trying to get the previous government to say exactly that. Sorry, the media is at fault here, says Alan.
And on CDs, I'll buy your portable CD player off you, says Kerry in Luxembourg.
Okay, you're on.
What price are you offering? Also, what about mini discs? One of the best music formats ever, and I still use mine.
I've got one of those somewhere as well.
I haven't got a mini disc player.
Yeah, I've got a mini disc player somewhere. Yeah.
And Liz says, my car is so old, her car, has got a cassette player. I love Wally, and what he lacks in sophistication, he more than makes up for in his Impreza WRX performance.
What? What does that? I need subtitles. I need a translation. Mm. Do you know what? The cassette thing is very much alive, isn't it?
Yeah.
I recently interviewed Rachel Chinnariri, who is brilliant young British artist at the moment, and she handed me a cassette of her latest album. And I was like, what? Come again? I've got nothing to play it on.
Come complete with free pencil so you can wind up the tape again when it becomes loose.
And some lovely Diamante hair clips, which I think I'm a couple of decades too old for. They got passed on. But yeah, it is a thing.
Lovely free gift, though.
No, it was nice. Yeah. I did declare it.
Pleased to
hear
it.
Before you text in.
6:55. Go, 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 shorty. It's your birthday. We're going to party like it's your birthday. So if it is your birthday today, just be aware you're not that special because the 26th of September is a very common birthday. In fact, it is peak time for births. Apparently, there'll be around 2,000 babies being born later today, which is 200 more than the average. Well, let's talk to Marie-Louise, also known as the modern midwife online. Hi, Marie.
Good morning.
Lovely to talk to you. So a busy day for midwives all around the country.
Absolutely, that's it, yes. September tends to be generally busy, but as you say, today is the biggest day of the year.
So this date is known about, is it, amongst midwives?
Not this date specifically, but definitely September for sure, yeah.
Okay, and it doesn't take too much to count back from that and work out this is because Christmas time, people tend to let their hair down a bit.
Absolutely, that's it. I mean, so today actually falls 39 weeks and 3 days after Christmas, which is a full-term pregnancy. and that's it exactly. I think around the holiday season, people are letting their hair down, they're in holiday mode, they're going out, perhaps they're drinking a little bit more, and they're a bit more relaxed. The other thing is, which is obviously key to having a baby as well, the other thing is I think a lot of people now are planning pregnancies as well with the intent to have a baby in September at the beginning of the school year. So I think there's a couple of things at play.
Is that because children who are older in the school year tend to find it easier, often find school easier and more academically successful, I think?
I'm not sure about academically successful, but I think that parents want to give, obviously, their children the best opportunity to fit into school and to be ready for school, really, and to kind of, I guess, be that little bit ahead. But I think overall, it actually doesn't make much difference. And, you can plan a pregnancy and it might not happen, or, you can get a bit relaxed and all of a sudden you're pregnant,
Yeah, I know. It's happened several times. So will maternity units be making special provisions for this month? Any chance of that? You'll have more staff on, or because I know how stretched maternity units are at the moment.
Yeah, that's it, exactly. They tend not to necessarily put on additional staff because the thing about maternity is you can have a random June afternoon, and all of a sudden it becomes particularly busy. So the staffing levels do tend to remain the same, and they don't necessarily put on any additional staff or change the rota or anything like that. We're always as best equipped as possible for it to suddenly become particularly busy.
Yeah,
Marie-Louise, it's Claire here. I know you've got children. Did you
you know, get a little bit careless at Christmas, or when are their birthdays?
So I've got two children, and both of my children are summer babies. One's August and one's July. So I must admit, I conceived around November time, and it was after a Christmas party.
Right. Oh, well, listen, this is a good public service announcement, isn't it, going into the Christmas party season?
Just watch out.
Just watch out.
Are you on duty today, Marie-Louise, by the way?
I'm not. I'm actually on maternity leave with my second baby.
Oh, how old is this one?
He has just turned one.
Okay, nice.
I'm taking the full year off with him. Yeah, exactly.
Well, look,
yeah,
enjoy
it's
it.
Nice to have that time. Well, yeah,
no wonder you're up and about early this morning. Then, thank you so much for talking to us.
Yeah, of course. We've been up since 5 a.m. My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, halfway through the day already.
Yeah.
That's Marie Louise, known as the modern midwife. They don't really have greater academic success with September babies.
I think they
just completely made that up. But they do tend to be better in sports. There is some, I think, evidence of that around.
And I think conversely, if you have children late in the summer, then they are playing catch up because sometimes they can be a whole year behind. So if it is your birthday today, we'll give you a shout out if you tell us why you're the special one. Lee in Watford says 45 today, not special, but it would be great if you read it out. Which I just have.
It's a very special day now.
Yeah.
And happy birthday to my husband, Tim, 52 today, with love from Viv and sons, Jack and Tom. Happy birthday, Tim. Right, if it's your birthday, tell us why we should mark it out specially for you, please. 85058. Send us a voice note as well. Sing us happy birthday, whatever you want to do.
The Voice of the UK.
This is Five Live Breakfast.
And here's the Five Live news this morning. The UK, as well as 10 other countries and the European Union, have signed a joint statement calling for a 21-day ceasefire on the Lebanon-Israeli border. It comes as the UN Security Council held an emergency session to discuss the situation, which the Secretary-General, Antonio Guterres, described as all hell breaking loose. The UK Foreign Secretary, David Lammy, also addressed the session.
The United Kingdom condemns Hezbollah's attacks on Israel over the last 11 months, which have driven more than 60,000 people from their homes. There was no justification for these attacks. They have brought misery to ordinary people in Lebanon and Israel, and they have done nothing to end the conflict in Gaza or secure Palestinian statehood.
The BBC has heard testimony from a woman who said she was raped by the former owner of Harrods, Mohammed Al-Fayed, when she was 16 after being made to have an intrusive medical examination. Harrods' new owners have previously apologised unreservedly and said the actions of Mr Al-Fayed were that of an individual intent on abusing his power.
Network Rail says there's been a cyber attack on the public Wi-Fi network at 20 railway stations. Customers directed to websites containing what the company called inappropriate material before their Wi-Fi was suspended. An investigation into what happened is underway.
The mayor of New York City, Eric Adams, is facing federal criminal charges. The details haven't been revealed, but he's under investigation for campaign funding violations. He would be the first sitting mayor of the city to be charged. He insists he's done nothing wrong.
If I'm charged, I know I am innocent. I will request an immediate trial so the New Yorkers can hear the truth. New Yorkers know my story. They know where I come from. I have been fighting injustice my entire life. That fight has continued as your mayor.
The BBC understands that one of the richest people in the world, Elon Musk, has not been invited to the government's International Investment Summit. Sources say it's because of the billionaire's social media posts during last month's riots, which were described at the time by ministers as utterly deplorable. Next month's summit aims to attract tens of billions of pounds of investment. The BBC has asked for Elon Musk's